Public health officials predicted it. Doctors warned us. COVID was going to come roaring back to life after the summer's ebb. And now we're smack dab in the middle of its second wave. We all knew it was coming, but at least part of me was unrealistically hoping we'd escape it. Of course, I was wrong. Unsure where the second wave will take us, we're all sort of waiting and watching and putting one foot in front of the other. A lot of us are back to working remotely, if we ever stop to begin with. Remote working is pretty easy if your work includes a lot of spreadsheets and report writing. But if you're a teacher, then you've not only had to learn new technology, you've also had to teach like your hair's on fire to keep zoomed out kids engaged and get to know students that you never actually lay eyes on. Today, on our sixth and last episode of Rising to the Challenge, we'll check in with two teachers, a computer science professor who spiced up her classes with gently used Halloween costumes, and the director of the U of I marching band that can neither march nor band. We're going to hear a lot of brass. Also, before we say goodbye, we'll do one last check on the state of Illinois' economy almost a year into this pandemic, and we'll talk with two students who 3D printed hundreds of masks, then distributed them to the other abled community for free. Stay with us.
The mystery virus started here in the city of Wuhan. Chinese authorities pinpointing its source to this food market. Those infected are being treated in medical centers, suffering symptoms similar to pneumonia.
We're deeply concerned both by the alarming levels of spread and severity and by the alarming levels of inaction. We have therefore made the assessment that COVID-19 can be characterized as a pandemic.
I think Americans should be prepared that they're going to have to hunker down significantly more than we as a country are doing.
Right now, we turn to alarming numbers in the coronavirus pandemic. Those numbers have set records.
The rising number of cases and hospitalizations in many areas are still mounting.
Coronavirus cases continue to climb. Separately, the CDC says it's possible that the number of infections in the U.S. could be 10 times higher than the confirmed case count.
At the rate Americans are dying from COVID in a week or maybe less, we'll likely reach the 250,000 mark. And while not all will get sick, plenty will and plenty are, leaving some hospitals looking more like disaster relief centers.
This is a make or break moment for Illinois.
My name is Robin Kravitz. I am a professor in the Department of Computer Science at the University of Illinois. I've been here a little over 20 years. Don't say that. No, that's okay. You can say that. And this is the strangest year that I have ever experienced.
You can say that again.
And this is the strangest year that I have ever experienced.
I meant that figuratively. Not literally. When the year started getting strange last March, Professor Kravitz, along with every other teacher in the country, was forced onto a 13-inch computer screen. Now, she had some expertise with technology. She is a computer science teacher, after all. But it's hard enough to keep students' attention when they're sitting in front of you, let alone when their face is smaller than a postage stamp.
I decided that I needed to entertain the students a little, make it a little bit more lighthearted. And at first I put on a silly hat or something, and I was just standing in my room with a blank wall background. And the second week, I think he was 12 at the time, my 12-year-old son came along with a hat that was a Yoshi from Mario Brothers. And he said, "You should wear this today." And I'm like, "Oh my God, I can't believe I'm going to wear a Yoshi hat." And then I decided if I was going to wear a Yoshi hat, I needed to have a Yoshi background. So it became this ongoing game to try to figure out a fun hat to wear and a background. I got to the point where the students actually were excited to see what I was going to wear that day. It had absolutely nothing to do with my class. It had absolutely nothing to do with the material I was teaching.
Did you find that you had to like one up yourself? Did you find your like, okay, one, it was just a hat the first day, then the Yoshi hat the second day. Did you end up being like Carmen Miranda on day three or something?
I ended up being Elton John, I think, on day 10.
And to answer your burning question, between Yoshi from Mario Brothers and Elton John, who else was she?
I was Gandalf, graduation.
By that she means she wore her cap, gown, and PhD hood.
Leia, Mario. I was a Illinois fanatic. I actually have hooligan hair from Holland. It's this orange hair. Don't ask me why. I have a safari hat in my house. So it's a safari. I was a karate sensei, Elton John, and Yoshi.
It paid off. Dr. Kravitz caught her students' attention.
I actually got the best reviews I've ever gotten in a long time. Maybe the students saw me as in a different light than they normally do. I don't know. But it was a lot of fun. But it wasn't just fun. You know, I really wanted to make sure that the students were okay.
All kidding and costumes aside, teaching to the quarter-inch camera on your laptop is hardly inspiring. Most teachers got into the field to connect with their students, not to have to perform a new soliloquy in their living room every hour.
When you're teaching on Zoom, it's actually very different. When you're used to teaching in person, you know, right now I'm talking to you and I'm reacting to your smiles and your eyes and so that you understand what I'm saying. And we do this all the time when we're teaching. But on Zoom, I'm lucky if I can see a small little version of one or two people, and I really can't tell if they're engaged or not. So we tend to talk longer. We tend to babble a little bit. We tend to repeat ourselves to re-explain things, and everything takes a little bit longer to teach. And that's really been challenging up until today.
No matter how you dress it up, or yourself for that matter, Zoom is hardly optimal. It's definitely served us well during this pandemic, but we all know its flaws are many. Among them, anonymity. Dr. Kravitz learned that both professionally and personally.
You know, I had a conversation with one of my son's teachers during parent-teacher conference, and she said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I don't know what your son looks like." You know, and it struck me that, you know, I don't know what many of these students look like, and there's no chance this semester. You know, they're gonna know who I am, and when we are finally face-to-face, they're going to walk up to me and say, "Oh, Professor Kravitz, I have a question for you." And I'm going to say, "I have absolutely no idea who you are because I couldn't see your face, and I'll feel bad about it."
The students may be somewhat invisible on Zoom, but Dr. Kravitz is trying to make them less and less invisible in every other way.
We're all worried about the students. We don't know how this is going to affect them. And for undergrads, it's challenging enough. For PhD students, they are going to be here for 5 or 6 years. And very frequently, they spend their first year finding their advisor, finding their friends that they're going to be friends with for the rest of the time that they're here. We're already seeing struggles.
So for her new PhD students, she's decided to act as a matchmaker of sorts, a Yenta, if you will, to help them find their dream mentor.
I called it speed dating for advisors. So we set up breakout rooms for each of the faculty members that were looking for advisees, and then let the students walk around to the different breakout rooms to figure out if there was any matches there.
And for her other students, well, I'll let her tell you.
This semester I'm teaching a wireless lab class. Students need materials. So very early on in the semester, I went to my office, I swiped everything off the shelf, I put it in a box, and I brought it home. And all of the students come by my house now. But I kind of feel like a drug dealer in my house for engineers. Here, have a Raspberry Pi. Here, have some wireless devices. Here, have an Arduino.
Now, you may think that a Raspberry Pi is a tasty pastry. Who wouldn't? But it's also the name of a tiny stripped-down computer used to run very simple programs. And you may think that an Arduino is an imported sparkling beverage, but it's really a hardware circuit plug-in for DIY computer projects.
And I'm like getting these kids hooked on building wireless technology. Frequently, I'm wearing my fuzzy slippers because my feet are cold. I am not, you know, my professorial persona. I mean, we're lucky in computer science. I teach in jeans and a t-shirt, so it's not that different, but it has been strange.
Strange though teaching has been this last semester, the creativity Dr. Kravitz brought to her classroom seems to have paid off.
I actually had a record number of students take my class this semester. I think there's quite a few that came from class last semester, which means I engaged with them, which means that they enjoyed the class enough that they would take another class with me, which, you know, is the best feeling you can have as a teacher. And so, but at least one of them asked me if I was going to put costumes on again this semester, and I had to disappoint them.
Robin Kravitz, professor of computer science at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Last March, when COVID first made headlines in the U.S., everything was scarce. Information about the virus, policies about how to mitigate the virus, and supplies with which to combat the virus. Masks disappeared off the shelves, hand sanitizer was nowhere to be found, and we all know what happened to toilet paper. Enter Joey Peters and Arielle Rousen, two elite athletes who saw a big need and decided to do something about it.
So it's heating up the filament so then it can drop it into beads, and that's how the prints are created.
Joey was a highly decorated, competitive Big Ten gymnast who retired after a shoulder injury sidelined his career. And Arielle is a former member of the U of I wheelchair racing team, a team that regularly sends athletes to the Paralympics. It's also the U.S. Paralympic training site for wheelchair track. Arielle and Joey met a few years ago when they were both undergrads at UIUC. Joey started volunteering with the wheelchair racing team, and Arielle was one of the star athletes on that team. Joey later became an assistant coach. He's now a UIUC PhD student in kinesiology, the study of body mechanics, and she is a grad student in global public health in New York. Oh, and one more piece of information you should know about Arielle. She started her own company in 2016 called Ingenium Manufacturing, which makes 3D printed gloves for wheelchair athletes. When COVID hit, she and Joey immediately recognized a need that wasn't being addressed, getting masks to people with spinal cord injuries. The friends decided to work together to find a solution.
There's a really high percentage of unemployment for people with disabilities in the United States. And so just having access to PPE and any kind of shielding is something that is a definite need in that community.
With the $10,000 grant from the Nielsen Foundation, the two of them started manufacturing an NIH-approved mask design on U of I and Ingenium 3D printers.
These masks are the same kind of mask that an able-bodied person would use or a non-disabled person. The benefit was just that we were able to give them for free to people with spinal cord injuries. And also, a lot of times, people with spinal cord injuries also have immune-suppressing diseases. And so it may not be safe for them to go to a store and purchase a mask or just go out as much as people with full immune capabilities can do. And so by us being able to just directly mail them a mask or mail it to a group they're affiliated with and then have it dropped off at their house, that reduces any risk of them having to go outside as well.
The mask itself is a hard plastic shell that goes over your mouth and nose with space for a round filter in the center front and a foam seal where it meets your skin. They've made over 750 masks so far and have sent them all over the country.
So we first kind of targeted these sports organizations that we knew had a large need for masks because they have a very large amount of kids and adults in their programs. And then we started working with rehabilitation centers all across the states that we are familiar with and affiliated with. And then Joe also worked really closely with Carle Hospital Network here in Champaign-Urbana and was delivering masks to them and the people that need them in rehab and spinal cord injury units. And so those were kind of the first places that we started distributing to.
And it's not just access that people with disabilities struggle with. It's also a shortage of masks that meet their needs.
But I know a mask design that's really popular among the disabled community are masks that have a clear filter in the front so people who are deaf can lip read. That's really important for them. And then another mask design that I've seen produced is people who are quadriplegic and use power chairs, they use this device called a sip and puff it's like a straw that goes in their mouth, and that's how they control their wheelchair if they can't use their hand for a joystick. And so obviously that's a barrier with a mask if you need a straw in your mouth to be able to move. And so I've seen mask designs surface that incorporate the sip and puff device into a mask to keep it all effective and sanitary.
In fact, the type of mask Ariel is describing may be their next project.
We're working on trying to develop a 3D printed version of a sip and puff mask. That would be really something special if we could put that together. So that's in the initial works. So, you know, those CAD files are very complex and intricate, so it takes a really high knowledgeable computer engineer, computer science person to be able to develop or help design something like that.
That project is down the road a piece. For now, while she's in New York and he's in Urbana-Champaign, they're wrapping up production on the original face mask and putting this project to bed.
This is the last of our supply. So once we sand them down and add some, filters and other necessary supplies onto it, then we'll find an organization to donate them to, and that'll kind of put the conclusion on this specific grant or this project.
Joey Peters, graduate student in kinesiology, and Ariel Rowson, graduate student in global public health. Before we say goodbye and close out the Rising to the Challenge series with a rousing visit with the marching band, we wanted to have one last check-in with something a little less harmonious, the state's finances. Because even though we'll be leaving you at the end of this episode, unfortunately, COVID won't. So we wanted to see what long-term impact it might have for the great state of Illinois. To do that, we called up Amanda Cass. She's the Associate Director for the Government Finance Research Center at UIC.
Illinois had fiscal challenges for many years. Most recently, the budget impasse under Governor Rauner. And the state was kind of starting to dig itself out of that hole. If you want to think about the state's finances as like a carrier ship, you can't kind of turn it on a dime. So it's like we're slowly starting to turn the ship. And then we have COVID happen, and it has impacted the state's finances in a number of ways.
We all know what happened after that. Suffice it to say, Illinois' income went way down and its costs went way up. In addition to being more vulnerable than other states that may have bigger reserves, a bigger tax base, or previously balanced budgets,
you know, the state was just hit another kind of fiscal punch by the constitutional amendment to change the income tax structure being rejected by voters. Lawmakers now are looking at either one, enacting some pretty big across the board cuts, which I don't think there's real appetite for,
which limits the state's options.
And so in lieu of doing that, they're going to have to raise revenue in some way. And I think they're going to be looking at raising the flat tax, so raising the income tax rate on everybody. And politically, it's challenging to say, hey, we're going to raise your income taxes at a time when people are losing their jobs or, again, underemployed.
The state isn't the only one that's hurting for some green. Universities are going to be looking at some hard times due to the COVID trickle-down effect. When the state has less money, the state schools have less money. Because the education budget was cut during the last recession, schools were already having to do more with less.
What are the short-term effects, and then what are the kind of long-term effects? Right, and so I think that there's questions about the pandemic and the kind of quick change to online classes and remote learning. Does that bring about long-term changes for university instruction?
And if remote learning is here to stay, that can have major implications for university towns.
Universities are large anchor institutions in the communities that they are. If everything, not everything, but if most things become remote, what does that mean for the economy of the Champaign-Urbana area?
So far, enrollment has been steady, kids were on campus in the fall, and as much as things can be stable at such an unstable time, they are.
UIUC is a world-class institution. They have this really robust testing program. Potentially, UIUC can serve as a model of here's how you can bring back students to campus and have the kind of traditional college experience that students want.
Hopefully, the trickle-down effect can be dammed up eventually. The state has not run out of options yet.
So one thing that the state could do, and this has been, you know, talked about by political leaders from both Republican and Democratic parties, is expanding the tax base. So Illinois' sales tax structure predominantly taxes goods, but doesn't tax services. So like when you go and get your haircut, you don't pay a tax on your haircut, but if you buy, you know, a bottle of shampoo, you pay a sales tax on that. So the state could generate revenue by expanding the sales tax to services. How much, though, I think is a bit unclear, because services is an activity that's been really impacted by COVID-19.
That isn't the only thing impacted by COVID. And when it comes to the economy, Amanda Cass has concerns about what COVID has revealed.
How does this crisis impact inequality? So do we see income inequality widening? Also, what does that mean for the racial wealth gap? Does this widen that gap? And then the kind of second area that I'm really concerned about is, what does this mean in terms of gender inequality? Right, we're seeing how women and women's kind of gains in the workforce are really being eroded by the pandemic and by kind of childcare duties falling on women, and that then impacting their ability to work. And so I'm concerned about what does that mean, just not just for the short term, but what are the long-term kind of consequences of this?
Cass points out that there have also been some silver linings to COVID, like working from home, for instance, to say nothing of all of the social justice activity that has spilled out onto the streets.
A potential silver lining is that the pandemic and some of the political disruptions, political upheaval over the police violence from the summer, is exposing inequities and is leading to demands for change and real substantive change. So I'm hopeful, if I think of it as a silver lining, I'm hopeful that kind of exposing the vast inequalities that exist can lead to really great change. And this is a moment where we can kind of implement big, bold policies that can address some of the big issues that we've been grappling with for a long time.
A Amanda Cass, Associate Director for the Government Finance Research Center at UIC. If you've ever been part of a marching band or a team of any kind, you know it's like a family. In this case, a really big, brassy, well-synchronized family. The marching band is made up of 375 musician athletes who normally sweat and freeze before, during, and after every game. And that's not just football. It's also men's and women's basketball and volleyball. But here's the most important thing you need to know about marching band. These kids work really, really hard, 18 to 20 hours per week. The only person that works harder, Marching Illini director Barry Hauser.
Pre-game is going to consist of 8 different pieces of music. And so that's all from memory. That is the same with the exception of one, because one of those, we play the visitor's fight song. It's 40 pages of drill though. And so 40 pages of drill is quite a bit for a collegiate pregame show. So you've got 21 pieces of music that you're learning throughout the fall. But then we haven't even talked about what we do during football games themselves. We play in between downs, so first down offense, first down defense. We all have little shorties that we play for, and we may have 15 to 20 of those that we play on a regular basis. And then for the media timeouts, we'll pull from another 20 to 25 pieces of music. So when we go to a timeout, it's not going to be something that we've played at halftime or something that we played at pregame. It's going to be something different.
Getting the idea? It's a huge commitment for students and Hauser alike, or was. Now, due to COVID, the renowned Marching Illini is a band who can't rehearse together, can't perform together, and can't march together. In fact, their only presence in Memorial Stadium at UIUC is as cardboard cutouts. This is a massive year-round logistical nightmare. There are 700 auditions, there's summer band camp, choreography, instrument allocation, rehearsals, conditioning, travel, uniforms, upkeep. I want to go back to bed just talking about it. To say Barry Hauser is a one-man band is just too tempting. My apologies. And he would be the first to tell you that he and his staff and students and graduate students are all pitching in to keep this colossal machine well-oiled. But this semester, of course, the machine is idling. No marching, no band. So what are they doing?
I don't know what we are doing. I apologize to my students a lot. I think how and what we're doing right now maybe has a lot more to do with the why. Why are we doing this? And that's going to go back to, again, the engagement of our students.
Last spring, when he realized COVID wasn't going away anytime soon, Hauser drew up 18 scenarios of how marching band could work this year. The first of Hauser's plan accounted for everything being open and back to normal. And the 18th plan was for everything being shut down and nothing being open. So far this semester, they've been operating on plan number 17. And plan number 17 means that every day, marching band meets on Zoom, all together or in smaller groups by instrument called sectionals. In the big all-band meetings, normally, of course, they'd all be practicing and playing together to tighten their sound and work the dynamics of all the many pieces of music they have at the ready. But now, they've decided to talk about things they normally don't have time to go into.
This year is truly about making sure your physical and mental well-being. That's number one priority. If we learn something about music, great. If not, I don't care. It's really about making sure that we're engaging each of you. We're making this a really special experience for all of you.
Like the 152-year history of the band.
Every band program can basically trace their lineage back to the University of Illinois in some capacity. Nation's first collegiate band program. Notre Dame is actually the first marching band, but we are the first comprehensive program of concert bands.
Conditioning.
Time at all. Then you have three different exercise days, right? So you have one that's going to be a cardio day, working on your cardiovascular endurance so that you guys don't get winded as much, but pun there.
Diversity, equity, and inclusion.
We need to make sure that if someone looks at this band and they don't see someone that looks like them, we need to do a better job of that.
The physiology of hearing.
So sound goes in through the ear, goes into the ear canal, vibrates the eardrum. Vibrates the eardrum, then sets these three little bones.
And actual marching practice, even though there's actually no marching.
So again, focus on the pointing of the toe and making sure that the foot does come off the ground. Think energy up and use the platforms of the feet for this, as opposed to, again, going all the way down on those heels. Okay? So, okay, we're gonna do that one more time. Here we go.
But as much as Hauser and his staff have worked to keep everyone engaged, there's no way that sitting on Zoom class after Zoom class can match the pageantry, adrenaline, theater, performance, and excitement of a marching band halftime show in front of thousands of fans, which has even worn natural optimist Barry Hauser down a bit.
That optimism has been challenged much more so than normal. And so it is harder. It's harder to, you know, to turn the computer on, to look at all these faces, and not know really how are they doing. I don't get to see them in person. I don't get to see their mannerisms. You don't get to feel the energy of how their day is going like we typically get to do. So there's a lot of concern. There's a lot of worry. I feel like this is not the experience that any of us want. But the fact that we're able to put these things together and simply turn on Zoom and this many people do show up, I think it speaks volumes to the culture that our students have helped create and the culture and community that they've created along the way. We've tried to focus more on the positive aspect of the things we can do, and I think that's been a key part for a lot of our success so far this season.
The marching band did have one event this fall in which 275 students came together to actually play in person as a band. It was volunteer, and obviously only the students living on campus could participate, and they were socially distanced. But masking musicians is a little bit more complicated than masking other people.
The big concern at the beginning was aerosol-producing instruments, using air to put through an instrument to play a musical sound. So in looking at that, we've had to move to putting bell covers on our instruments. We've had to produce and customize masks to wear while playing an instrument, because you can't just put a mask on and still play. So we've created with one of our vendors here in town a mask that covers your face that also has a slit in it that allows you to put the mouthpiece in.
Everyone was ecstatic to be able to play in person all together. And that was more important to Hauser than anything else.
This was the first time I've heard the full band, like, ever. And it's November. I mean, that's not normal. That's not normal at all. And our expectations for this were, we simply get together and we get to make music. I don't want to say I don't care how it sounds, because I do care, and our students do as well. But more than anything, the fact we were able to go through so many hurdles and challenges to get to this point, just to be able to do this, it was a very celebratory moment.
But maybe not quite as celebratory as the things they normally get to do, like, say, cramming into Times Square playing for the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade in 2015. Hauser is hoping for more celebratory moments in the coming months. Somewhere between his frustration at the situation and his natural optimism, he speaks for most of us when he says,
I guess we just all hope and fingers crossed that this will pass in time for us to start some type of resemblance of something normal by the time we reach August.
Rising to the Challenge was produced and engineered by Libby Foster, with editing help from Shayna Roth. Special thanks to Tim Colleen, Moss Bresnahan, Lily Duncanson, Laura Clower, Robin Kaler, Kirsten Ruby, David Mercer, Gretchen Yorty, and Tom Hardy. Rising to the Challenge is a production of the University of Illinois System, with production support from Illinois Public Media. I'm Gwen Maxey. Thanks for listening.